This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Our guest is Tiffen Dixon, an international lawyer and professor and one who's practiced law before the Tribunal for Former Yugoslavia and for Rwanda, many years of experience, and she is in Belgrade, and we're very glad to be talking to her. Are you there, Tiffen?
Yes, hi, Phil.
Tiffen, I think you're right on the button for Canadian news. There's a feature in the Globe and Mail today about the bombing of Yugoslavia in 1999. It focuses on the situation of Kosovo. But I know that many people have read that this morning and are asking themselves about the history. Why are you in Belgrade? What's going on?
Well, this is the 20th anniversary of the beginning of the NATO bombing, 78 days, 78 nights, against Yugoslavia. And so it's pretty normal that there's going to be commemorations. It's a very intense time here, and an international conference. Actually, there are a couple conferences taking place, but this is the only international one, and it was called by the Belgrade Forum for a World of Equals, and hosted by the Generals and Admirals Club. So hosted at the what's known as the Army House in downtown Belgrade, that luckily didn't get bombed. And so this is a conference including many participants from around the world, peace activists, generals from Russia, from Serbia, a general from France. There are artists, Peter Hanke in particular, Fulvio Grimaldi, the Italian documentary filmmaker who's done work on Yugoslavia, on Iraq, and indeed on the aggression in Libya. There was the Venezuelan ambassador, representatives from Cuba, Nepal, Greece, India, free thinkers of Germany, a number of academics, an Israeli historian who was, I believe, the director of Yad Vashem for 15 years, who came to talk about Jasenovac's death camp in World War II Croatia, which is a reality that the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia infamously refuses to acknowledge. So really a wow. Wide diversity of participants with a real emphasis, I think, going through the whole thing, that this be acknowledged as an aggression, as a crime, as a crime against the people of Yugoslavia, as a crime under international law, you know, a violation even of NATO's own charter, and yes. Really a precedent that set the stage for all the subsequent aggressions. This is not humanitarian intervention. It's an aggression, as it was in Iraq in 2003 and in Libya, and attempts to do so in Syria as well. It was a great moment of solidarity, and you know, I want to point out that the ambassador of Venezuela, a remarkable, beautiful woman, got a standing ovation, and everybody rose, and suddenly came chants of No Pasaran. And I've been coming to Belgrade for a couple decades now. I've never seen anything like it.
No, that is a remarkable story. It must be very poignant for the delegates there to see a representative of Venezuela when the U.S. has already basically tried to seal them off and even steal the presidency of that country, that so many people there in Belgrade
Yeah, well, they've
Welcome
seen that movie
and,
before, and it is,
identify.
As you say, I think poignant is the precise word in the circumstances. I noticed a lot of people, the socialist journalists who were covering the story at the time, you know, breaking out in tears outside at the coffee break, so afraid, so afraid that what befell them would befall Venezuela, but heartened, too, that they're fighting back and it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that the 90s are not repeating themselves in an identical fashion. So there's some hope, and really what's wonderful is this beautiful solidarity. And I forgot to mention a Palestinian delegation that was also very enthusiastically received.
I like the did I understand that the title of the gathering is World of Equals?
That's the host organization here in Belgrade.
That's a great
Belgrade
title.
Forum for a World of Equals, and the title of the conference is NATO Aggression, 20 mm-hmm. Years On, Lest We Forget.
Yeah, well, now you practice in you represented clients around this that were arrested following or at the time of this, the 1999 events. And the magic word was invoked, humanitarian interventionism. It was Bill Clinton. And
Yeah. And
the world bought into it. We could say the world, I mean, those bullied by the U.S., but they all went along. And the camouflage was humanitarian intervention. Am I right? And talk about that concept and how it was used in 1999.
Well, participant after participant touched on this, and I guess Bill Clinton's ears must have been ringing because the room smelled of sulfur for quite a while. You'll recall that time because mm-hmm. we were talking about it back then, not to
yes.
not to date our professional collaboration. But what's important to remember and key to all of this was the wave of absolutely perverted propaganda that tried to create an analogy between what was happening in Yugoslavia broadly since the early 90s. Mm-hmm. up to and including 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a deliberate manipulation of images. There were prominent PR firms that were hired by Croatia, by Bosnia-Herzegovina, to demonize the Serbs. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds like a slogan, the Serbs were demonized, but there are actual contracts between those countries and a PR firm in New York setting out to do just that, to ensure in particular, and this is absolutely grotesque, James Harf, who did this ad campaign, admits it in an interview with a journalist from France, and he says, you know, my greatest challenge was to actually convince the American Jewish community that the Serbs are criminals. Because I fully expected them to actually be friendly to Serbs with the experience of World War II and hostile to Croatia in particular because of their history in World War II as fascists who played a huge part in the Holocaust, killing one-third of their Jewish population, not to mention Serbs and Roma, and an expectation that they might not be too sympathetic given the fascist past of some of the Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina, not to mention their leader, who was a overt anti-Semite who wrote a book about it, and not to mention the president of Croatia, Tudjman, who similarly said he was grateful and lucky that his wife was neither a Serb nor a Jew. And so he had his work cut out for him, and that consisted in kind of disseminating as much as possible shoddy stories that attempted to dramatize events and indeed tend to analogize what was happening to the Holocaust.
Yes.
And it started with these pictures in 1992.
Oh, the famous
kind of,
picture,
you know,
the man behind
made the rounds,
barbed wire.
Belsen 92.
Mm-hmm.
And a mainstream media that kind of dogpiled this whole story, making everyone very happy that there was a mm-hmm. genocidal other that we could, you know, fight as white saviors, and that was key in sort of building up this aggression in 99. I mean, there are other elements. It would really take 10-20 hours to unpack fully.
Yeah, but you know,
but, I think the diplomatic apotheosis is when President Milosevic was presented with a not at all a deal at Rambouillet in 1998 that mm-hmm. demanded of him in its Annex B that he allow NATO troops on the full territory of Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
And, you know, the serene historical consensus now is that this was a design attempting to put to Milosevic a condition that was obviously unacceptable to him.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that he wouldn't sign, and that would be the pretext to eventually bomb.
Yeah. I have to ask you, because this matter about, I think you said earlier in the beginning that the Yugoslav tribunal didn't recognize the crimes that took place in Croatia in World War II?
How were they able
to quibble on that or not say, of course, or because there's absolutely no historical argument about it?
Well, that was the topic of my presentation. I wanted to stray a bit from the usual stuff I do on the international criminal law side of it, and examine a little bit, because the tribunal, or now what it calls itself, more fittingly, it has now given itself a new Kafkaesque name. It's the mechanism. The mechanism,
I like that,
has been bragging in its outreach division, and sort of try to imagine something called a court that does outreach. It's absurd. So this Security Council creature is now going on about how it has created a definitive history. It has written a definitive history combating denial and revisionism. So here we go again with the analogies to the Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
And it strikes me as a provocation, or at the very least, an invitation to scrutinize their judgments very carefully. And I noticed that some, pro-ICTY, pro-NATO, quote-unquote historians have been promoting the quality of the history of the ICTR, and in particular the first judgment, Tadic. And you recall the first judgment at the ICTR, Akayesu, where similarly the judges, who are ill-equipped to be historians, set out without the training, without it ever having been asked of them, and it's a hard enough job to do a trial in the first place, but they decided, hey, let's not only do a trial, well, let's actually not do a trial, but let's write the history instead. We're going to write the history of this thing. We're going to write the history of Rwanda, which they did with a single witness, in that case, Alison DeForge. And similarly, in the Tadic case, at the Yugoslav tribunal, they did so on the basis of a single historian, a British military historian, so he's not a specialist on Yugoslavia, and they have a 69-page history in the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is offensive. It is in and of itself, and I don't hesitate to say it, they themselves in Tadic engage in Holocaust denial.
Mm-hmm.
They make a first reference to newspapers in Belgrade stirring up nationalistic sentiment by referring to the remote past.
The remote past.
Are we talking about the Paleolithic? Are we talking about the Neolithic?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm barely joking, because one of the definitions
World
I found
War
of II. The word remote, which is in the Longman's Contemporary English Dictionary at number 3, as it relates to time, the example given of remote is a remote time when dinosaurs walked the earth. Okay. So Serbs are stirring up nationalist sentiment in Belgrade papers by referring to remote history. And that history we discover in the judgment is World War II. If you've spent any time in Yugoslavia, World War II is not remote history.
It's not over.
It's pretty much yesterday.
Yes.
Yugoslavia lost 30% of its population in World War II. This is not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So Serbs like to drone on about this remote history. They enter into the topic of Jasenovac by referring to it, most euphemistically, as a place of ill treatment. As a place of ill treatment.
Ill treatment.
So you learn from Tadic more about the Habsburg occupation than you do about what happened in Jasenovac, which, by the way, at the conference, Gideon Grey from Yad Vashem just completed a huge book in which he concludes that Jasenovac was indeed more brutal than Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I say, without hesitation, that this judgment, Tadic, it does not in any way, shape, or form combat denial or prevent revisionism. It is itself straight-up Holocaust denial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and coupled with that, the justification of NATO bombing for the bad side, actually, for those who do deny the Holocaust it took in Croatia.
Yeah.
That's a really...
How wonderful is that?
That is, no wonder they're actually not getting away with it, and you're attending a conference of the type that you are. I notice that people are calling for try to get NATO basically put on trial. I mean, I don't know what form it's taking. I mean, basically crimes. All of these were. Let's go to that point. There's no UN. The United Nations Security Council did not authorize, I don't even know if they were asked. This was just a so-called humanitarian mission. Nobody has to ask anybody. We bomb a country. Could you talk about that? Bypassing the UN has become, to me, the biggest crime. I mean, isn't that where you're supposed to resolve issues such as the one that of Yugoslavia in 1999?
Well, of course, this aggression is a violation of the UN of the UN Charter. That's obvious, black and white, and this had to be resolved at the Security Council level. This is not self-defense. This is not authorized by the NATO Charter. Self-defense Article 5, and therefore Security Council authorization would have been required. And, I mean, in reality, talking real politic here, they didn't think they would get the vote, and so they just decided to go ahead. Yes, it's a violation of international law. Now, is it a crime? So I heard countless speakers refer to the crime and that they ought to go to jail and they have to be in The Hague and so on and so forth. And, you know, I would just kind of caution not to fetishize international bodies so much, because I think we've discussed this before, Phil. They're not that great, and that is a term of art. And aggression was not given, for example, to the ICTY as criminal jurisdiction in its creation. Mm-hmm. Because that might have held, you know, NATO powers to eventual scrutiny. So aggression was not there. Aggression was not there at the ICTR, where that might have come in handy had the temporal jurisdiction been extended to 1980, when in fact Rwanda was a victim of aggression. And, you know, back to the general case, aggression has only been a crime since last July under the ICC, under the Rome Statute, and only among the ICC member states who have ratified those amendments. And perhaps not shockingly, there are very few countries who have indeed ratified the amendments establishing a crime of aggression. So and as far as the crime of aggression goes, it's not applicable for the aggression in 1999, because law can't apply retroactively. That said, I found very interesting discussions at the conference regarding reparations. This appears to be a serious movement. There are a lot of folks doing serious work in terms of quantifying damages against the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. And then it's a question of venue, of jurisdiction, of how to do this. Because, again, with an international organization like NATO, they do have immunities. And though there's been a heartening Supreme Court case in the United States not permitting immunity to international organizations, it only applies to the commercial, their commercial contractual work. So it would not necessarily apply in the case of NATO. A bit of legal creativity will be required. I know that at the time before Mr. Milosevic was in jail, a case before the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, that has jurisdiction between member states of the UN, was in the works. And I think what would have to happen now, and I'm getting a sense that it's in the air, is to reinvigorate that process and get back to work on that case. So not the crime of aggression that would be prosecuted, in which an individual or individuals would be prosecuted, but rather a case before the ICJ that would envisage reparations, and there are precedents for that.
Oh, tell me about the ICJ, International Court of Justice. Is that, am I getting it right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does that sit, and who would bring that case?
That sits in The Hague, so that's the court that is envisaged in the UN Charter.
That's the one we call the World Court.
The exclusive judicial organ of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Exclusive, so one wonders why there are two ad hocs, but whatever. That sits in The Hague, and who would bring the case? Well, member states.
Uh-huh. And is that...
And so some observer states, as we know in the case of Palestine.
I suppose almost all these new... Former Yugoslavia, but now independent states, I assume all of them would be tempted to come for damages, right?
Yes, and Bosnia-Herzegovina did sue Yugoslavia, was still Yugoslavia, and it became against Serbia for genocide. And that decision held following the ICTY that there was genocide in Srebrenica, but they could not find that the Belgrade authorities were responsible for any conduct that had taken place in Republika Srpska, in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So that ended up being And Croatia also sued Serbia, and that ended up also being 0-0 for both opponents.
Uh-huh.
So would other states be tempted? I mean, they have been tempted. It has happened. I mean, for Slovenia or Macedonia or Montenegro, well, Montenegro would be interested because they did get bombed in 99, but you know, Macedonia, Slovenia wouldn't have a tremendous interest in terms of this in terms of this 1999 bombing.
Yeah. We're speaking to Tiffan Dixon, lawyer and professor, and she's attending a conference. By the way, is the conference over? A conference in
Belgium? It ended yesterday. We went to Tashmajdan Park, in which there is a memorial for the murdered children of the NATO bombing. It's a very poignant commemorative statue, and it's written in Serbian and also in English so that the NATO people can understand. And it says, "We were only just children."
Mm-hmm. I have to
ask
you.
We laid wreaths there. And we went to Radio Television Serbia, RTS, that mm-hmm. was also bombed by NATO. It was bombed by NATO after CNN asked a certain Mr. Vucic, who was then Minister of Information, to come to an interview on Larry King's show. Mr. Vucic is currently in power in Serbia, and he was late. And the 16 media workers who showed up for this link up with CNN were all murdered. So the ruins of RTS are still there to be seen. Close to Tashmajdan Park as well.
Also, something really dramatic happened. The Chinese embassy was hit, right?
Chinese embassy was indeed hit, yes.
And they lost. They had casualties. They had some deaths there.
Yes, they did.
By the way,
they showed pretty astonishing restraint.
Mm-hmm.
I recall being in Arusha, Tanzania when it happened, and I didn't expect restraint from them, but...
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
What?
Yes, it was. I mean, there were other crimes against civilians. A passenger train was bombed, about which Wesley Clark famously lied he explained that the train was moving too fast and they couldn't anticipate that the bomb would hit it. And we later learned that the film that he showed to establish this had been sped up three times the original footage.
Yeah.
And other crimes like these children, yeah. One of whom was a mathematical genius, had won some international prize, 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many others.
Yeah.
Just the infrastructure destruction and one topic that was mentioned at the conference, some pretty renowned scientists talking about the depleted uranium. Mm-hmm. In these bombs that remains in Serbia, the cancer rate was the highest in Europe for a while. And one of the professors pointed out that this cancer rate is now extending to, or now in higher than Serbia, in Romania and Hungary. And he is working on a hypothesis that this radiation is going through shared groundwater and through the rivers, so Danube that flows into Hungary and Romania that's just on the border that shares groundwater. So there's a huge concern with respect to these cancers. They're seeing huge increase in brain cancer in small children in ways that they can't account for, that they don't see in other places on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, and then you really want to you think anger, rage, but that has to be channeled into something constructive. And what's being discussed is really reparations.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a question I have to ask. I understand that there are weekly demonstrations that have not been reported here, but they're going on in Serbia and Belgrade. Did you attend any of these? Or is that true? And what? And I assume one of the issues that those people would be addressing is the idea that Serbia might join NATO.
I did witness one just this Saturday. So yes, it's true. It's been going on since January every Saturday. The numbers now are modest. I was trying to get a sense of what it is, because there are always folks that dismiss it from our side of things and say, well, it's just another color revolution. It's just another, you know, foreign-funded astroturf. And that it is not. Uh-huh. However, it's, you know, it's opposition within internal politics of Serbia.
Well, what about this issue of NATO itself?
The demands, the complaints are similar to those we've seen in France. We're talking about privatizations. We're talking about austerity. We're talking about the just exceedingly low salaries that people have in Serbia. I was just talking to a woman 15 minutes ago who was proud that her daughter found a job, but it's €3 an hour, and it's 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she has two master's degrees.
Yeah. Well, what about this subject?
This is the kind of, I mean, these are highly educated people who don't have a lot of opportunities. So those demonstrations are focused on domestic issues. And sadly, I'm afraid to report that there was not a huge turnout on the commemorations yesterday. But one of the things I noticed, I'm staying with elderly people here who were there during the bombing. The trauma is real. It's fresh. People remember acutely the night the bombing started, and they remember going to bomb shelters. They remember the discomfort. They remember the absolute terror of these of the air raid sirens and the bombs falling. And I think that there's a lack of desire to reengage this bombing. I mean, there's anger, there's rage,
yes.
And there are exquisite arguments formulated by the intellectual class. There's wall-to-wall coverage on all stations. There was a lovely debate. It was actually an agreement, but seven international lawyers of renown carefully setting out all these points with respect to the nature of this aggression, that it is an aggression that's in violation of international law,
yes,
and that it was also within the theory of just war, jus in bello, that it was disproportionate and did not discriminate and protect civilian objects and so on and so forth.
Yes.
But I did not, I'm afraid, observe a groundswell in terms of people on the street on this issue. But, I mean, of course, nobody can even conceive of Serbia joining NATO.
Okay. Well, now this,
and it was very clear at the conference there, the Minister of Defense even spoke, and he said, "We will never, ever, ever join NATO. I can promise you that."
Uh-huh.
And I think folks were quite happy to hear him say that, because they're unsure of the ability of the particular government to have a backbone.
Yes. Well, by the way, very apropos, today's Globe does say that Donald Trump is inviting the president of Kosovo and the president of Serbia to come to the White House for a signing of a new arrangement between them. But the Globe says, you know, there's quite a bit of negativity in Serbia to the idea. Can you remind us, what is the status of Kosovo? Because they're already talking about Kosovo being a NATO member. But what was the understanding? What is the legal status of Kosovo, in your view?
In my view, I don't think it's a subjective question.
Well, you speak
question.
For mankind on this, so there, please do.
There's a Security Council resolution, 1244, that recognizes that Kosovo is a province of Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not been overturned, modified, amended. As far as international law is concerned, Kosovo is a province of Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's the other international law issue of recognition, but Kosovo is not a member of the United Nations. It's been recognized by some, but not all NATO countries. Spain does not recognize
yeah,
Kosovo.
Greece doesn't recognize it, right? Cyprus?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the idea, and so you said everyone had read this article, and so I have to admit publicly that I have not.
No, I'm surprised at you. I have this morning's news. Yes.
Yeah, didn't catch the Globe and Mail here in Belgrade this morning.
I doubt that they'll be reading it.
But this strikes me as a preposterous offer. Undoubtedly the leaders will enjoy a trip to Washington, but I don't see anything coming of it. Because then you would have the people on the street in Belgrade, to be sure.
Well, tell us why, if it's a province of Serbia, we're talking about Kosovo, why is there a U.S. military base called Bonsteel, and when and how did that happen?
But that happened in 1999.
They built the base immediately at the time of the bombing.
Yes. And this is the biggest U.S. military base. You can see it from space, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to do that, but isn't that kind of almost where people ought to begin to understand the sort of interest of NATO and the U.S.? Because if you build your biggest base in a place that is under law, is not even doesn't belong to the people of this artificial state called Kosovo. I mean, that's like a promise of
the U.S. before, Phil.
That's a promise of further aggression.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And who are they?
Who are they
targeting?
You know, it looms large in the imagination of Serbs, and as an insult plus injury, and was certainly mentioned a number of times in the conference by many Russian politicians.
Mm-hmm.
One of whom asked, you know, is it okay to be more Serbian than the Serbs? The question they've been asking themselves: Should they make the kind of objections to Washington that the Serbian leadership itself is not making? Should we really be, isn't it bad to be more Serbian than a Serb? And then they concluded that, well, no, because the U.S. is being more Kosovo Albanian than Kosovo Albanians.
Yes, a good.
But that being said, they did a few of these Duma representatives did sharply invite Serbs to be a bit more aggressive on this issue of returning their province, which is, you know, actually the birthplace of the Serbian nation, you know, to defend this sovereignty a bit more a bit more forcefully.
Mm-hmm. You must have a kind of a positive takeaway of this. I think many people are tired of NATO. There's more and more talk in Canada of why are we in NATO. There's the exotic character of it. Now the president of Brazil says he would like to be in NATO. I assume the president of Honduras would also like to be in NATO. And I can recall in 1999, people were pointing out that NATO had no right to be anything involved with Yugoslavia. It wasn't there. But so this has grown into this odd, almost, I hate the metaphor, but cancer seems to occur. This entity keeps reaching. But where you are, there seems to be kind of a line being drawn, right? I mean, you must be heartened by the gathering.
I am quite heartened by the gathering and, you know, the ecumenical nature of it, from representatives of the Serbian church to uninhibited communists from around the world. There's agreement certainly on NATO, and there's agreement with the fact that something must be done.
Mm-hmm.
Something must be done to repair this trauma. And the thirst for justice is such a human characteristic. And
mm-hmm.
As always here, I wish that, you know, Henry Kissinger was in The Hague, for example. And even if it's just symbolic, and just to be recognized as victims of NATO and mm-hmm. not as genocidal war criminals. And of course, the conference comes right after the verdict in the Karadzic trial.
The mechanism
the ICTY is still oppressing these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a very real sense, an understanding of the victimization by NATO in a way that persists today with the depleted uranium, but not only. There are a number of other chemicals I learned that are having quite measurable effects.
Mm-hmm.
And that the time is not only for, you know, verbal solidarity, but for concrete, tangible action. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that can be done in the judicial sphere, that has to be explored. But something real, and certainly something politically very real, and that's not going to be happening in the Trump White House, to be sure.
Yeah, the institution that was violated was the United Nations. And recently in the United Nations, they've had struggles, and it was striking, heartening is the word. The United Nations did not agree to play ball with the United States trying to steal the sovereignty of Venezuela. The UN said no, the president of Venezuela is Maduro. And they went on as though the U.S. hadn't said a word, although the U.S. has been thumping its chest and making noise, and it's Canada has joined in. But the mm-hmm. target in this is the U.N. Did the U.N. get talked about as a forum for struggling once again over former Yugoslavia?
It absolutely did, and I will tell you, primarily by the Russian Duma representatives were there, in the form of giving assurances that they will now, and I quote, that they will now, as in Soviet times, defend the interests of the oppressed.
Huh.
It was quite striking. And they mentioned Venezuela, several of them,
mm-hmm.
that they would continue to politically defend Venezuela before the United Nations. And the ambassador of Venezuela received a very warm standing ovation with the shouts of "No Pasarán."
Yeah.
I think you're right to point out that the UN is under attack. The UN is under attack opportunistically. Mm-hmm. When the Russian Federation was represented by Boris Yeltsin, the UN was fine. The UN was good enough to establish the ICTY and the ICTR. But now the UN is under attack because it's not playing ball.
Mm-hmm.
Were the Russian Federation to revert back, I mean, perish the thought, to yes. that type of leadership, and China were to be very, very different, the UN would be all right again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a principled position.
You know, I think it's so interesting. You're at this conference because what happened in Serbia was almost the tripping. The word "red line" is overused, but it seems to have been the red line, even in Yeltsin's Russia, because I remember that strange episode when the Americans said, "Well, we're going to go in there, we're going to go," and to I forget what the destination was, but the Russians arrived first.
Yes.
And it was almost a confrontation.
Well, you'll love to hear this. This just premiered here in Belgrade on the 20th. It's a blockbuster movie. It's a Serbian-Russian co-production that tells that story. And it's a gorgeous shoot 'em up, explosions, beautiful women holding beautiful little girls crying in their arms. Handsome.
You're talking about
Russians,
my kind of movie.
Serbs.
Go ahead.
Huh?
I said you're talking about my kind of movie. Go ahead.
What happened was I just wanted to make the cultural note because this is 20 years on. This is the first time that there's a cultural artifact that's telling this story. It has a gigantic budget, and everyone is very excited about it. But what happened is that yes, the U.S. tried to take the airport in Pristina, and there were Russian generals that actually told this story at the conference. And the Russian armed forces came through Bosnia and managed to get to the airport at the same time. And the American onslaught was prevented by a British general who said, "But we don't want World War III." And thus it was averted. But yes, indeed, that happened. And you're right to say that even under the Yeltsin leadership, they were not, you know, entirely cowed by the U.S. And indeed,
no Russian patriotism rose up.
Yeah, and proof of it is that that they could not get a United Nations Security Council resolution approved to bomb Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Russians even then would not allow it.
Yeah. No, it does, and since that time, it's very interesting to date it, and it was former Yugoslavia. It was that there was that moment when on the Russian side they said no more,
right?
And Yeltsin was out of business shortly afterwards, and a new leadership has emerged. And you could say to NATO, "Well, you did that." We're speaking to Tiffan Dixon. We're very grateful she's given us the time. This is very exciting to hear that this conference took place. I hope there'll be a record of it. I hope people can find it online and such things. Would you know?
There will be a record of it, there will be a written declaration. There will be all the presentations in writing, and there will also be videos. And I'll be happy to let you know so that you can pass it on to.
Oh, if you could, we want to post that on the Taylor Report, and we'd like to talk to you sometime in the near future about developments with the International Criminal Court of this Philippine decision, et cetera. But also get a review of what happened there in Belgrade because it's going to have impact. I'm convinced.
Well, it would be my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, Tiffan Dixon, Once again, it's a pleasure talking to you, and we look forward to talking to you again when you return.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.